Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, what an election. I have an erection over the election. All right, not really. That'd be weird, but... That was something, man. That was something. I mean, my mind was orgasming, surrounded by politics yesterday. Running on fumes, didn't get much sleep, was up all night analyzing the election. Was up prepping for the show as well. Lot of stuff to get to today. I mean, obviously I'm going to break down Super Tuesday for you and what it means going forward. We'll compare what happened with my predictions. And I got a whole bunch of other stuff too, including, man, what a debate they had. And I mean this sincerely. Usually if I praise CNN, it's tongue-in-cheek and I'm fucking around because they suck. No, but on CNN last night, they had an amazing back and forth between Van Jones, who I actually kind of dislike because he was a dick to David Pakman for no goddamn reason whatsoever, but it's Van Jones versus a Trump supporter. And, oh my goodness, the Trump supporter might be the dumbest person they ever allowed on TV. The stuff that he says, you're just going to be like, come on. Like... It's one of those things, I was so angry when I heard him say the shit he said that I'm not angry. Like, I was so angry that I'm not angry. Because the anger peaked, and then I was like, it doesn't even make sense to get angry over this because it's so immensely stupid that the anger is just wasted. It's a wasted emotion. So I was so incredibly angry that I came out the other side of the anger and I wasn't angry. Does that make any sense at all? It probably doesn't, right? But that's how I feel about it. And then also, I got a bunch of shitty predictions. Karl Rove with the shittiest prediction ever. It's hilarious. We have white nationalist radio shows allowed into Trump events. They get press credentials. By the way, who doesn't get press credentials? Actual legitimate news organizations. But somehow, the white nationalists get the press credentials. We got Mitch McConnell and Chuck Grassley, I believe, not randomly, but spitting in Obama's face. Like, hey, fuck you. No appointments for you. No judges for you. And Osama bin Laden later on in the show. We have some of his new personal documents released. And he said some things that are, getting headlines today that I really want to talk about. Hopefully we'll have time. I got a jam-packed show, and I don't know if I'll have time to squeeze that in later. But worst-case scenario, you know, we get to that tomorrow or something. But let's go ahead and get started here because so much stuff to talk about, especially... Super Tuesday. So let's do it. Yesterday we had an amazing Super Tuesday election. It was incredibly exciting from start to finish. Now I'm going to get to the Democratic side in a little bit, but first let's talk about the Republican side here. Here's what happened. Donald Trump won 7 states. He won Alabama, Arkansas, Georgia, Massachusetts, Tennessee, Vermont, and Virginia. Cruz picked up 3 states. He picked up his home state of Texas. He randomly picked off Oklahoma, which I certainly didn't see coming. I don't think anybody saw coming. And he got Alaska as well. Now, Rubio only took Minnesota. So a bunch of analysts today are like, hey, man, what a terrible night it was for Rubio, huh? But, I mean, if you read the polls... going into Super Tuesday, you would have known that best-case scenario for Rubio is he won 2 states. He ended up winning 1 state, which is actually probably more likely what was going to happen with him if he won any states at all. And in virtually all the other states, he came in 3rd. So it's a horrible, horrible night for him. I mean, obviously, I don't even know why I'm bringing it up, but Ben Carson and John Kasich, www.stepasidesun.com, they're done if they stay in the race at this point. It's simply because their egos are too big and they want to stay in for business reasons, like Ben Carson, for example, is trying to sell a book and trying to, you know, push his brand and get his name recognition higher. So it was a fascinating night, though, man. Now, I have to say, this was actually The worst I thought Trump could possibly do. Now, I told you guys, you can go back and look at the segments. I did probably three segments in the past 2 days leading up to Super Tuesday, where I said the minimum number of states that Trump wins, it would be 7. And then I said maximum, he sweeps all but Texas. So this was on the lower end. We got to call it what it is. He won 7. Now, another angle of it that's kind of throwing me off is Trump ended up losing a state that I had for him as a guarantee based on the polling and based on all the data that we had. Oklahoma. Like I said, Cruz picked off Oklahoma randomly. So Trump lost a state that I thought was a guarantee for him, and he picked up one of the other ones that I thought was a toss-up state. But what that tells me is, are there any other states where Donald Trump is appears to be, according to the polling, a gimme, a shoo-in, but then he might actually end up losing? I mean, it opens an interesting question here, and it's something to bear in mind moving forward. Now, also, on the delegate front, because Texas has so many delegates, you know, Cruz isn't crazy far behind Trump right now. Now, again, when you go state by state and you look at the state numbers, I mean, Trump is still running roughshod over everybody. But in terms of the delegates, it's not as much of a blowout as it appears to be. So what does this mean moving forward in the race? Well, it means that, you know, Marco Rubio, his chances now are so tiny. Marco Roboto apparently was not able to break free of the Marco Roboto mold and perception of him, even though he had a good debate the last time, and now he's been going aggressive against Trump. So his chances are all but totally done. You do have kind of a two-person race, you could say, between Cruz and Trump. Although, look, I've been saying it from the beginning, and I'll stand by it today, even though it certainly is the case that if anybody's going to catch Trump at this point, it appears to be Cruz and not Rubio. But Ted Cruz, to me, is the Rick Santorum of this runaround. Rick Santorum was uber-religious and uber-unlikable, and Rick Santorum, for example, won Iowa in one of the recent elections. Well, that's exactly what Ted Cruz did. He picked up Iowa. And I was ready to rule him out almost after he won Iowa, because historically, who did they go for? They went for a Rick Santorum one election cycle, and the other election cycle, most recent election cycles, they went for Mike Huckabee. So you go for Mike Huckabee once and Rick Santorum the other time. I mean, what that tells me is you go for the loser, crazy evangelical candidates, and that's what I see Cruz as. Now, I was on TYT for the election coverage last night, and Cenk and I were disagreeing over this. He thinks that Cruz is a legitimate candidate. I mean, fair is fair. According to the delegate count right now and according to the numbers, yeah, he is the most legitimate behind Donald Trump. But I just don't see it from a guy who cites Rush Limbaugh and Mark Levin and Glenn Beck as sources during debates. He's appealing to such a small block of the American public. I mean, maximum 25% to 40%. And virtually everybody else is turned off by him. He's not going to get moderates. He's not going to get independents. And I don't see him as a threat in a general election. So if he were to get the nomination somehow, I'd probably like that more, because I'm more scared of Trump in a general election, because I think he has a decent chance of beating Hillary Clinton. Now, it looks like right now the Hillary will be the nominee. She's the favorite, but that's still up in the air. We don't know. I mean, Bernie hung in there last night, and again, we'll get to that in a little bit. But I would rather have a Democrat run against Cruz, because I think hashtag feel the smarm, I think he'll get run roughshod over because he's deeply unlikable. I'm not one of those people who's big on intangibles. Like, hey, my gut opinion is that the way that this guy's face looks, people don't like it. But there's actually been articles written by experts who are like, no, there's a scientific reason why you want to punch Ted Cruz in the mouth. Well, okay, what that tells me is it's not just me. It's universal. When people look at him, it's hashtag feel the smarm, feel the sleaze, feel the slime. He's a grotesque kind of fake politician, and he ain't going to fare well in the general. So it is more down to just Trump and Cruz here. But so I've been saying for weeks now that it's 80% or more that Trump is going to win the general. When I did my breakdown, I'm sorry, not the general. He's going to win the nomination. But so he's Did he blow it last night? No, he didn't blow it. Is he the overwhelming favorite? I had Trump at about 80% going back a few weeks, and then when I did my Super Tuesday numbers, I moved him up to like 85% or more. Today, what am I going to give him? I'm going to stick with 85%. I had said going into Super Tuesday, 85% or more, and I said minimum 7 states he wins, maximum all but Texas. So he did the minimum of what I expected, and he did it in a weird way. So I'll say he's still about 85% to win the nomination, and it's yet to be seen how that'll fare against the Democrats. I see a lot of underestimating of him still to this day. I think a lot of people think in a general election the Democrats would love to run against Trump for a variety of reasons, but I don't believe those reasons. I don't agree with those reasons. I think every once in a while he says populist things. His over-the-top confidence has been a great benefit for him, and he's actually done some genuinely populist rhetoric that's going to get even some blue-collar union Democratic voters to go for him. So I would be more scared of Trump in a general election than I would be of Cruz, and I'll stick with about 85% today that Trump becomes the nominee. And finally, let's just take a look at my predictions here. I said Trump is going to win Virginia, Georgia, Oklahoma, Alabama, Tennessee, Vermont, and Arkansas. I said Cruz is going to win Texas. And then I said the toss-up states are I always mess up AK and AR. For some reason, Alaska, Arkansas. All right, let me try that again. So my predictions were Trump wins Virginia, Georgia, Oklahoma, Alabama, Tennessee, Vermont, and Alaska. I had Cruz winning Texas, and then my toss-up states were Arkansas, Minnesota, and Colorado. Now, Colorado, they didn't do for the Republicans last night. They just did it for the Democrats. But I was wrong on Oklahoma, which is really, really weird. Like I said, Trump was basically a guarantee when you look at the polls going into Oklahoma, but somehow Cruz picked that off. And I was also wrong on Alaska. Cruz picked off Alaska as well. Toss-ups, I had somebody tweeted at me asking if Rubio would win any states, and I said he might win some toss-ups. And he did. He ended up taking Minnesota, which is, like I said, kind of expected for him. He was going to win maximum two states. But either way, Trump got the minimum of what I thought he would get, and it's still overwhelmingly likely that he'll be the nominee, but while other people view this as a super domination of Trump yesterday, it's actually the almost underperforming for him, given what the polls said going into Super Tuesday. So there's your general breakdown for Super Tuesday. We have a good idea of what the race is going to be like going forward, and man, is it going to get even more interesting. Okay, now let's go to the Democratic side. We had an incredible race on the Democratic side on Super Tuesday yesterday. Here's what happened. Hillary Clinton won Virginia, Texas, Georgia, Tennessee, Arkansas, and Alabama. Now, all of that was totally expected. I told you those were guarantees for Hillary Clinton. The polling was overwhelming. Those were southern states. The demographics of those states lean heavily for Hillary Clinton. But the one where she won and the state just leaned in her direction, but it was still a toss-up, was Massachusetts. Now, does that suck for Bernie? Yes. It sucks that he lost Massachusetts, but understand, he's only behind one delegate in the state. It was close. It was a very, very close race. There's no doubt about that. So those are the states that she won. Now, Bernie took Vermont, which we knew he was going to do. It was a guarantee. He was up like 75 percentage points on the polling leading into it. That's his home state. He also won Minnesota, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Now, Oklahoma was kind of a toss-up, but leaning Bernie. And you had Minnesota and Colorado that were true toss-ups going into Super Tuesday. And he took those toss-ups. Now, of all the toss-up states, the toss-up states were Minnesota, Oklahoma, Colorado, Massachusetts. Bernie won three of the four toss-up states. And he didn't lose Massachusetts by a lot, like I said. And it's proportional delegates, so he might be only one delegate behind when all is said and done. So overall, what does that mean? It means we still have a race on our hands. Now, I told you guys leading into it that worst case scenario, Bernie only wins one state, it would be Vermont, and he loses everything else, in which case, I said, you got to keep it real, he'd be donezo. I also said, hey, if he wins two states, still kind of donezo. If he wins three states, okay, he can stay in the race, but it's really not going to be all that competitive. I wish it would be, but my job is to be honest with you guys, and that's how I see it, and that's what I think the numbers dictate moving forwards and stuff like that. But he didn't win that. I said if he wins four, he stays in the race. We have a race on our hands here. If he wins five, oh, my God, it's a you might as well flip a coin. So if he managed to pick off Massachusetts as well, this race would be wide open moving forward. Now, he didn't. He finished slightly behind in Massachusetts. But, I mean, picking up four states, that ain't the worst thing in the world. Now, moving forward, there is something to look out for, though, and I'm already seeing it. The mainstream media saying, oh, my goodness, he's done. That's it. The race is over. I'm getting texts from people. I'm getting DMs from people. I'm getting tweets from people. Dude, what does this mean? Is he done? Oh, my God. They're saying he's done on CNN. They're saying this. They're saying that. They're saying this. They're saying that. No. Relax. Breathe. That's not true. Oftentimes what happens is people who, and I mean in the mainstream media now, too, people who don't really know anything about politics, they just look at, oh, she won Virginia, Texas, Georgia, Tennessee, Arkansas, Alabama, and they go, she won way more states than he won. Damn, this thing is over. But if you looked at the polling going in to Super Tuesday, you already knew that she was going to win those states. And by the way, those are mostly won southern states that are going to go to the Republicans no matter what in the general election. And that's one of the biggest facts in this race, is that if you notice, Hillary wins overwhelmingly all the southern states. And what does that mean? Well, again, it's going to go to the Republicans in the general election. You really want a Democrat who can carry the Democratic states and, you know, the purple states, the ones that could go either way. Not only that, Hillary, when you look at her unfavorables, there's a poll out from Super Tuesday. 55% have an unfavorable opinion of her. Guys, that's basically tied with Donald Trump and his unfavorables. And people were making, oh, yeah, he's got no shot because of his unfavorables. That's what they said about Donald Trump. Well, why are you not saying the same thing about Hillary Clinton when she basically ties him in unfavorables? They don't say it because the default, oh, well, I mean, she's the most electable. Even though Bernie beats the Republicans head-to-head way more than Hillary does. In fact, Hillary loses to some in the head-to-head. She lost to Donald Trump by 3 points, according to a recent USA Today poll. And I just learned yesterday she lost to Cruz by 1 point in one poll. Losing to Cruz, what the fuck is that? I'm even surprised by that. I thought she would blow out Cruz. Look at what's happening in front of us here. Bernie has all but caught up nationally. Now, to be fair, in the averages, Hillary's still up about 7 points. But there's some polls that have Bernie beating Hillary nationally. So, you know, they're about even nationally. Bernie beats the Republicans in head-to-head better than Hillary does. Hillary's only really winning the southern states here. And her unfavorables are through the roof. And also, again, when you ask people straight up, you know, what word comes to mind when you think of her, they say stuff like untrustworthy, dishonest. Guys, we still have a race moving forward. Anybody who tells you otherwise doesn't know politics. They don't know what they're talking about. Now, again, like I said, I would have loved to see Bernie pick off Massachusetts. He didn't pick off Massachusetts, but he still won 3 out of the 4 toss-up states. He won 4 states total. We have a race moving forward, and now it's just a matter of really pushing through further and getting the message out there. Some of the biggest news of the night is that Hillary's firewall didn't hold, because the firewall was supposed to be, okay, after South Carolina, then after Super Tuesday. I mean, come on, game, set, match, it's over. It's going to be literally impossible for him to win after Super Tuesday. That was the original arguments of her campaign. Well, that's not true. He's still in it. So the firewall ain't on fire anymore. Well, if anything, he's on fire because he's feeling the fucking burn. Look out, man. Moving forward, it's going to be a fascinating race. I'm really interested to see what happens. Now, don't get me wrong. Am I saying, oh, Bernie's definitely going to win? No. But does he have no shot? No. Like I said, what happened yesterday was the second best scenario. The best scenario being he also picked off Massachusetts. And also, let me just show you my predictions here. I said that Hillary was going to win Virginia, Texas, Georgia, Tennessee, Arkansas, Alabama. I said Bernie wins Vermont, and then I said toss-ups: Massachusetts, Minnesota, Oklahoma, Colorado. Worst case scenario, Bernie wins one. Best case, five. Needs four to stay competitive. Guess what? He got four. But then the other tweet that you see below it there, the bigger one, it says, of the toss-up states, most likely scenario, Oklahoma, Minnesota, Colorado go Bernie, Massachusetts goes Hillary. That's exactly what happened. That's exactly what happened. And that means there's a race moving forward. So everybody on Bernie's side here, don't feel dejected, don't feel down, don't feel like it's over. It ain't over. No matter what anybody else tells you, it ain't over yet. Hey, when it is over, I'll be the first one to come out here and say, it's over. The math doesn't work. If the math gets to a point where it doesn't work, I'm going to say it. I said it about Hillary in 2008 when she stayed in the race and the math didn't work against Obama. I was like, what are you doing? It just doesn't make sense. You're a math denier. That doesn't make sense. If it gets to that point with Bernie, I'll say it. We're not at that point yet. We're not at that point yet. And don't even worry about even the superdelegates. People, you know, have reached out to me, oh my God, the superdelegates is probably. Blah, 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 blah. It's like a 99% chance that the superdelegates, although they say now, oh, I'm pledged to Hillary, if Bernie were to win the popular vote, they would end up going to Bernie. Again, I get it. There's Democratic Party politics going on behind the scenes here, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz, and all this stuff, all trying to rig it in one way or another in favor of Hillary. I get all that. But if he were to win the popular vote, they would almost certainly go to him. So I wouldn't fear the superdelegates either. But there you have it, man. As far as how last night was on the Democratic side, that means that we're going to have a much longer race ahead of us. So buckle up. Okay. Now, let me do one more here real quick. So the Boston Globe and a plethora of other outlets are reporting that Bill Clinton crashed multiple polling places throughout Massachusetts, effectively locking them down. So he did it in New Bedford and he did it in West Roxbury. Now, some of the stops that he did created up to a 4 hour wait. And not only that, it's a clear violation of election law as well. You're not allowed to solicit votes from within 150 feet of a polling place, and he was inside of the polling place. So, was this a plan? Was this a trick? Was this something the Clinton campaign was like, hey, do it, and then I want Hillary? No doubt about it. There's no question. There are videos, you know, people were uploading them to YouTube and everything. They were all over the place of people online in Massachusetts, in places where Bill Clinton went, where nobody can do anything because he's there creating these massive backups. And what do we know for sure? The lower the turnout, the more likely it is that Hillary Clinton wins. That's just the demographic makeup of the situation. But in order for Bernie to win, he needs a high turnout and he needs a lot of millennials to vote. If he's creating backups at polling places, as he did, well, then you're going to keep the turnout lower and that helps Hillary. You think they don't know that? Of course they know that. That's why they did what they did. Now, also, one of the polling places where he did this, what happened? Bernie barely lost. We don't know for sure if it affected the outcome and we can pin it on that, but it's certainly possible if you're creating a 4 hour fucking wait and Hillary barely edges it out and we know that a higher turnout helps Bernie. Yeah, that's fucked up. He also lost Massachusetts by just a little bit. A little bit. Now, thankfully, the delegates are proportional, so he's not going to finish that far back overall, but it would have been great to have that column for Bernie, to have that state for Bernie. So, was this a dirty trick from the Clinton campaign? You bet your ass it was a dirty trick from the Clinton campaign. And where's the mainstream media on this? Fucking crickets. Only new media has reported on it. And by the way, guys, believe you me, I've gotten so many tweets in every primary and caucus so far. I've gotten so many tweets. Oh my God, voter fraud, this, that. There's a problem here, there's a problem there. And my job is I have to make sure that I believe the story, and there's enough evidence to take it to you guys on air. Now, other times I said, no, that seems kind of bullshit, or that's not as big of a deal as you think it is, or it's not a dirty trick, or this or that. No, in with this story, there's no question. We know Bill Clinton went to the polling places. We have video. We have pictures. We know he created up to a 4-hour wait at some points. And we know that the lower the turnout, the more likely it is that Hillary wins. This one is not a question. It's not up in the air. It was absolutely, positively, 100% a dirty trick from the Clinton campaign to try to help her win Massachusetts, and she did by just a little bit. So if the mainstream media was doing their goddamn job and they actually were giving you the facts and telling you relevant information, this would be huge news today. But of course, it's not. Instead, they've already anointed Queen Hillary the victor and the inevitable nominee, even though we still have a race on our hands. Okay, Bernie picked off 3 of the 4 toss-up states yesterday. 3 of the 4, and he had a chance in the fourth. He just barely lost Massachusetts. That was the fourth. So the idea that this isn't a race is total bullshit, and don't let anybody else tell you differently. And yes, you can expect more of these dirty tricks from the Clinton campaign moving forward. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, I got a lot more stuff. Van Jones goes at it with a Trump supporter on CNN in a fascinating back and forth. And Karl Rove faceplants with his predictions yet again. And Donald Trump and his cuddling up to white nationalists is incredible. And it's deeper than you think it is. It's not just an accident that, oh, look at that. I just happened to strange bedfellows here. I happen to be with white nationalists. No, it's worse than that, and I'll prove it later. Stay right there. All right, we're back, guys. We are back. Van Jones is going to talk to Trump supporter Jeffrey Lord here on CNN about Trump not disavowing white supremacists. And Lord is going to make the most ridiculous arguments you've ever heard in your life.
He is whipping up and tapping into and pushing buttons that are very, very frightening to me and frightening to a lot of people. Number one, when he is playing funny with the Klan, that is not cool.
He didn't play funny.
Hold on a second. I know this man when he gets passionate about terrorism. I know how he talks about terrorism. The Klan is a terrorist organization and has killed
elected terrorists.
You can put whatever label you want. That's your game to play.
No, that's your game to play.
No, they're not. We're not going to play that game.
We already understand.
No. You need to take a serious look at the fact that this man is playing fast and loose and footsie. When you talk about terrorism, he gets passionate. He says, no, this is wrong. But when you talk about the Klan, I don't know. That's wrong. And then you came on the air. And you said, well, this is just like when Reverend Wright was speaking.
Yeah.
Reverend Wright never lynched anybody. Reverend Wright never put anybody on a post. And you guys play these word games. And it's wrong to do in America.
It is wrong to understand that these are not leftists. They were a
You don't play games with that.
And you don't hide and say that's not part of the base of the Democratic Party. They were the military arm, the terrorist arm of the Democratic Party, according to historians.
That's
for God's sake, read your history.
I don't care.
The whole attitude of dividing by race is still here, and this is how Democrats need to deal.
Okay. That guy is painfully stupid. Did you hear the stuff that he said? He says the KKK is a, quote, leftist terrorist organization. And he goes on to say, by the way, that they're pushing the progressive agenda. And then he also said, this is the base of the Democratic Party. Wow. Now, what should be popping up in your mind here is, isn't he leaving out a tiny little fact here which destroys his entire argument that the KKK were Democrats before the parties in America flipped? So they were the conservative party. The idea that the KKK is leftist or liberal or progressive flies in the face of basic political definitions. It's opposite day in this guy's mind. They know nothing about American history. This is what they love to do. See, at the end he tried it when he said, the KKK is from the Democrats. He said it there, but what he doesn't get is, that's the talking point, you dipshit. The talking point isn't they're leftists, they're liberals, they're progressives. That is patently false. Now, again, it's true that it was the Democratic Party, but the Democratic Party at the time was the conservative party. There was a time in American history during the Civil Rights era where the parties flipped. And all the Dixiecrats, the Southern conservative Democrats, where did they go when Democrat Lyndon B. Johnson signed the Civil Rights Act and the Voting Rights Act? They went to the Republican Party. The Republican Party was like, hey, we'll welcome racists with open arms. Guys, this isn't a matter of debate. The Republican Party has been running the Southern strategy for decades now. You know what that means? That means, okay, yeah, give the blacks and the Hispanics and everybody else to the Democratic Party. We'll try to win elections solely by appealing to Southern racist white men. So this guy, it's so ironic that he's lecturing, well, you need to know your history. No, you need to know your history. That dumbass talking point of, it's the Democratic Party. Right, back when the Democrats were conservative. So in other words, it's still you. It's still your side of the aisle. But this guy is such a dunce, and he's so stupid, that he doesn't realize that, see, Sean Hannity is smart enough to know when I do my hacky, misleading, bullshit talking point that the KKK is from the Democratic Party, you don't go on to say, hey, they're leftists, they're progressives, they're liberals. You don't say that because it's not true. That's the opposite. So, again, it's true it's the Democratic Party, but the Democratic Party at the time was the conservative party. The parties flipped during the civil rights era. This guy leaves out that fact as he ironically lectures Van Jones about history. And then he also goes on to say, I love this line. He's like, you didn't see it here, but again, this goes on for a long time. He goes on to say, yeah, you know, the Democrat strategy is just to divide us all by race. Jackass. You're supporting Donald Trump. The whole scandal that's happening over Donald Trump right now is that he's dividing us by race. When he's asked point blank three times by Jake Tapper, live on CNN, hey, are you going to disavow? It's a softball right down the center. Like, huh? Right down the center. Huh? He goes, are you going to disavow the KKK? Are you going to disavow David Duke and white supremacists? He said it three times. Trump's like, yeah, I just don't know anything about David Duke. I don't know what you want me to say. I don't know anything about David Duke. And to be clear, he actually does. There's quotes of him from the early 2000s talking about David Duke. He's like, well, me? No, David Duke? I don't know anything about David Duke. I don't know what you're talking about. Later on, he wants to say, I had a bad earpiece. You had a bad earpiece. He said it three times. White supremacist David Duke, and he said KKK once. Nothing. You go, oh, I don't know. I don't know if I disavow them. What do you want me to say? And what's this jackass to take away from that? Democrats are always dividing us by race. No, he just divided us by race. You have white nationalists that are endorsing him left and right. We're going to do a story later today. He's giving press credentials to white nationalists, Trump, into his events. Meanwhile, now you can say, hey, whatever, he might let everybody in. No, he doesn't let everybody in. He doesn't give press credentials to legitimate outlets, but he gives them to white nationalist radio shows. Tell me again who's dividing by race, you jackass. No, I'm done with this guy. I can't believe they even allow him on CNN. I mean, what an embarrassment. You're going to have somebody that calls the KKK a leftist terrorist organization. You're going to have somebody who says the KKK pushes the progressive agenda and keep them on. And this isn't a, oh my God, PC outrage kind of thing. It's very simple. He's not doing his job. He doesn't know anything. In order to be an analyst on the news and a commentator, you have to know something. You can't go out there and say shit that's untrue and wildly incorrect, and then say, no, I demand that I should be allowed to keep my job. Well, perhaps you should do your job well if that's the case. That's like a plumber who comes to your house, doesn't know anything about plumbing. Yeah, I'm here to fix the toilet. Only problem is I don't know anything about toilets. I don't know how to do anything plumbing-wise, but pay me. Well, yet, why would I pay you? You don't know how to do your fucking job. What are you talking about? That's the craziest thing I've ever heard. This guy's in that category. He just called the KKK a leftist group. You're going to keep that guy on the air? You're fucking crazy. Compare this to anything a liberal would say. If a liberal said something outrageous, oh, fired immediately. Martin Bashir said something about Sarah Palin, about quoting somebody else and mentioning defecating in somebody's mouth. Oh, my God, fire him immediately. Here somebody calls the KKK a leftist organization. They had him on today, the day after, for another conversation about this. This isn't a debate. This one guy belongs in a fucking insane asylum or locked in a library so he can learn some shit, and Van Jones actually knows something. This isn't a debate. Let's stop pretending it is. Okay. Now let's go on to Karl Rove. So Karl Rove is, of course, the biggest Republican establishment insider in the world, and he managed to thoroughly embarrass himself again last night. So in 2012, I'm sure many of you remember that he threw a tantrum when Mitt Romney lost Ohio and Megyn Kelly had to go all the way back to the brain room in Fox News, which is hilarious that they have a room called the brain room, and they had to tell him, like, no, yeah, Karl, he lost it. Like, why are you – what's going on here? Now, by the way, there's a backstory to that, too. Articles came out after the fact where apparently Anonymous was involved and some other groups were involved, how they thought Rove was actually trying to steal the Ohio election. So when he was indignant that Romney didn't win, he thought it was literally impossible because he thought he somehow stole it. I don't know if that's true or false or whatever, but he had a meltdown on air, and it was fucking hilarious. Well, last night, he went on and on and on about how Marco Rubio has momentum, Marco-mentum, and how, oh, he's back in the race now, and he might win Virginia. And remember, he's doing all this because Karl Rove is the biggest Republican establishment insider. Marco Rubio, same thing, raises so much money from big money donors, and he would represent those big money donors better than anybody else. So him and Karl Rove, it's a match made in Republican douchebag heaven. So again, he's going on and on. Oh, Virginia, he's going to close the gap here. It's going to be great. He might win Virginia. Marco Mentum, this is what's happening moving forward. And then as he was talking about that, watch what happens.
Well, I think this race is going to continue to tighten.
Wait, hold on just a second. Apparently we've got a call in Virginia.
So you can tell us after we get the call.
Chris, thank you. Fox News can now project that Donald Trump will pull out a win in Virginia, leaving Marco Rubio to finish a close second, according to Fox News exit polls and early returns. What does that mean for Marco Rubio and Donald Trump? Back to Chris Wallace and the Campaign Cowboys. Chris?
So, Carl, tell me, what does that mean for Marco Rubio and Donald Trump?
Well, oh, dude, Chris Wallace is laughing at you. Oh, that's so sad. Understand what the point of this is here. This goes to show you that the Republican establishment, they have no clue what they're doing. None. So, up until this point, they just had the money almost totally control the system. I mean, that's the whole point of the Republican Party. Prop them up with corporate cash, prop them up with billionaire money, prop them up with Wall Street money, and then whoever raises the most money is likely going to win because they can run the most ads and get their name out there the most, and then you control your party and the political system, by and large, in that way. Well, now it's kind of a new era, at least in presidential politics. At the state level, so when it comes to the House of Representatives and the Senate, money still controls it totally. At the state level, money still largely controls it. But for presidential politics, it is a little different because there's more, like, everybody gets some time in the media, and, you know, now Donald Trump is dominating the cycle because he was already a celebrity going into this. So the dynamic has changed, and it's not just, hey, Marco raised the most money, so he's going to be the nominee. But this idiot is still latched onto that old model. And even when the polls are overwhelming and they show the best-case scenario, Marco Rubio wins two states. He's like, yeah, you know, Marco Rubio is, let me tell you, he's a real serious candidate here. Marco only won one state. Donald Trump won 7, Ted Cruz won 3. Marco won one state. Guys, we read the polls. I told you what the predictions were going in to Super Tuesday. I told you that, you know, Marco might win some of the toss-up states. There were 3 toss-up states. Maximum he'd win 2. He'd probably win just one. Karl Rove must look at no polls. Because he's like, oh, yeah, no, Marco Rubio, he's the guy, let me tell you. He's got momentum moving forward. That's what's going on here. Did you read none of the Real Clear Politics polls? Did you read none of the 538 polls? Nate Silver, who got the last 2 elections almost spot on. Do you care about facts in any way, shape, or form? But that's the point. He doesn't. They don't. I mean, this is a Republican insider idiot who's built this faux persona of, oh, yeah, he's the guy who wins you elections, and he's the guy who knows what he's talking about when it comes to elections. No, he doesn't. I'm looking at it right here. Anything before was luck if he had managed to get anything. He's widely credited with getting Bush elected, by the way. He's, you know what he is? He's Dick Morris 2.0. Remember Dick Morris? Exactly. Most of you probably don't. Dick Morris was the guy who was saying, let me tell you. He also kind of speaks like Ted Cruz, me. He was like, ah, let me tell you, Romney's going to win in a landslide against Obama. How'd that go? It was the opposite. Obama won in a landslide against Romney. But this guy was out there for days and days, months and months, saying, oh, no, Sean Hannity, you don't get it. Even Sean Hannity, to some of Dick Morris's predictions, he was like, oh, no, come on. He's like, yeah, Romney's going to win in a landslide in this state and in that state. And they just put him on Fox News, kept putting him on. They don't believe in facts. They don't care about facts. It's an establishment bullshit system and circle jerk of money and power. And they don't know anything. You take away the power of the money that props up the Republican establishment, and they're a bunch of fat old white men who don't know their ass from their elbow. Okay. Now, let's go to some amazing exit polls. This is quite a story here. The International Business Times is reporting on some amazing exit polls in the South from Super Tuesday yesterday. They say Republican voters in the Southern Super Tuesday states overwhelmingly supported banning non-U.S. Muslims from entering the United States. Over 60% of GOP voters in five Southern states said that they supported the idea. According to exit polls conducted by ABC News, Alabama and Arkansas led the way with 78% of voters supporting barring Muslims from entering the country. 78%. First of all, that's wildly unconstitutional. Second of all, imagine we take away the word Muslim and put in the word Jews. How would everybody feel about that? Ban the Jews from coming in here. You want those Jews coming in here? You guys are crazy. What would the response be? Oh, that's just obvious anti-Semitism. Clearly. Because what you're doing is you're doing collective punishment. Hey, for any bad ones that there might be, all of them are representative of that. So I am generalizing. I am saying you're all guilty. You're going to do collective punishment here, and I don't want any of you coming in. That's exactly what's happening with Muslims. You say, yeah, look, ISIS exists in the world. What are you going to do? ISIS exists. So what? Are we going to allow in any Muslim? They might be ISIS. I mean, what's going on here? You've got to ban all of them because some of them are ISIS. Okay, that's like the definition of generalizing. So if you agree with this policy, just at least admit it. At least admit that that's what your take is. Your take is, I am pro-generalizing. And call it what it is. If it's anti-Semitism, if you say it about Jews, it is anti-Muslim bigotry if you say it about Muslims. And that's exactly what it is. And look, we shouldn't all be that surprised because we're talking about at least the 78% number is Alabama and Arkansas. It turns out Republican-based voters in Alabama and Arkansas are a little bigoted against Muslims. Shocker! Shocker! But seriously, though, those numbers are unreal. And remember, this is the party that says we care most about the Constitution. That's what we're about. Second Amendment's not debatable, man. It ain't debatable. Tenth Amendment, not debatable either. That's states' rights, by the way. Not debatable. What about the thing about you don't do religious tests? That one, I kind of want to do it, but just for the Muslims. All right, did I say it out loud? I didn't mean to say that. What do you mean? I think that's constitutional. What are you talking about? That's constitutional. Look, it's not that hard to come up with a rational middle ground approach on refugees, on immigration. I've been saying it all along. I don't know how many other people are saying it. I hope more people say it. But all you need is just have a strong vetting system in place, and then, yeah, you allow in refugees. Why? Because wouldn't you want the same done for you if some really shitty thing happens here? Like, could you imagine if a super volcano goes off or something here and we have to leave the U.S. because it's just a fucking cloud, the Yellowstone volcano goes off or whatever and can't grow food, can't do any of this stuff. We got to go. So we try to go somewhere. And then some idiots are like, you know, I don't know. You're a white male. I mean, I'm looking at your statistics here, and it just so happens that most mass shooters are white males. There are 32,000 gun deaths in the United States every single year. Am I going to take the risk and let you in? And then you might go, all over my country and start shooting up malls? I don't know. Maybe I should ban all white males because of what some of you have done. How would you feel about that if you're a white male? How would you feel? You'd be like, I didn't do anything. What do you mean? You're going to reject me because something somebody else did and the only thing I have linked with them is my gender and my skin color? That doesn't make any sense. Now, in this case, it's religion. But it's the same logic in place. It's not like everybody who's a Muslim, by definition, is for ISIS-style jihad. That's crazy. So there's a rational middle ground here. Yes, you let in some. You don't have crazy open borders and everybody comes in and that's the end of the conversation and no vetting whatsoever. You let in some. You have a good vetting system and you do the right thing. It's not that hard. But the bigotry of the Republican base voters overwhelms them. They're so scared of the other that they just don't care. Oh, my God, yes, 78% of us in Alabama. Yes, just no Muslims. I'm so scared. But I'm a tough guy. But I'm so scared. So sad. All right, now. Let's go to one more before we take our final break here. And this one is Donald Trump and his white nationalism. For people who were still wondering if Donald Trump has white nationalist sympathies, Media Matters is reporting today, quote, Trump's presidential campaign gave press credentials to the white nationalist radio program, The Political Cesspool, which says it will soon air an interview with Donald Trump Jr. National civil rights groups have criticized the program for supporting anti-Semites, Holocaust deniers, and white supremacists like David Duke. The show openly states on its website that it's a pro-white program that wishes to revive the white birth rate above replacement-level fertility. It is hosted by white nationalist James Edwards, who has claimed that Martin Luther King Jr.'s dream is our nightmare, quote, interracial sex is white genocide, and, quote, slavery is the greatest thing that ever happened to African Americans. Goddamn, son! So if it's not clear enough how this guy's a white supremacist and he's a, you know, open racist here, we had a former neo-Nazi skinhead on the show, Joshua Turner. He's reformed now, and he helps other people reform themselves. He's a great guy. And he says that, yeah, no, the whole way that they hook a lot of young, impressionable kids in is they say, no, we're not anti-black. We're not against minorities. We're pro-white. That's what we are. It's not anti-something. It's pro-something. It's not anti-something. It's pro-something. And that's what they do to try to, you know, hook you in. And then once you're in, they'll hit you with, isn't slavery the greatest thing that ever happened to African Americans? Of course they're racist. Of course they're bigots. Of course they're intolerant. Of course they're white nationalists. Of course they're white supremacists. And they're welcomed into Trump's events with open arms. Now, understand, there is a rational rebuttal to this where people say, hey, man, look, freedom of the press. You let everybody in. And if you let everybody in, hey, that's good. You know, you want questions from all over the political spectrum, even if it's vicious, disgusting hate groups, they have a right to express their opinions. That's all true. I actually agree with that. If you let everybody in, sure, by all means. But here's the thing. They don't let everybody in. In fact, TYT reporter Jordan Chariton, this happened just recently. They tried to get into a Trump event. I forget which state it was in. This was a little while ago. And they said no. They were like, hey, scram, get out of here. They because apparently somebody knew TYT. They're like, okay, you got to go. Not just TYT either. It's others as well. There are other legitimate news outlets where Trump's like, yeah, I'm not giving you press credentials. You're too tough on me. So you're going to reject legitimate outlets, but you're going to welcome in with open arms white nationalist radio shows. Tell me again why it's unfair to call you a bigot. Tell me again why it's unfair to call you a racist. Tell me again why it's obvious that you have sympathies for these people. Look, he retweeted neo-Nazis two times. Now, it's not like he didn't know it was neo-Nazis, but that actually proves our point more because he saw the graphic that one of them sent out, which was just not true. It's about, oh my God, the blacks are murdering all the whites. And he retweets it because in his mind he's like, yeah, that's true. True enough. I think it's true. Yeah, the blacks are the problem. Retweet that. And other things, too. You know, just a sentiment that a white nationalist would agree with. He's like, that's right, spot on, retweet that. We're in dangerous territory, man. We're in dangerous territory. How much more obvious do you want him to make it, what his feelings are and how deep of an authoritarian he is? He wants to deport all 11 million, 12 million undocumented immigrants, even ones that have made a life here, and they're productive citizens. He's like, I don't care. I want to deport 11 million, 12 million people. Let's ban all Muslims from entering the U.S. temporarily until we figure out what's going on. And, you know, the list goes on and on. Torture, even if it doesn't work. Target civilians, kill civilians in the Middle East. What else do you want? How much more do you want before you can pound the gavel and say, you know, I think this is a problem. You should be saying it already, and this should put you over the edge if the other 900 stories didn't. Okay. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we have a reporter who caught up with Republican Senator Mike Rounds from South Dakota, and he asked him about Trump's KKK gaffe, and his response is sad. And then I got a whole bunch of stuff on Republicans and what they're saying to Obama now, because they don't want to do a Supreme Court justice appointment. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz, wait till I tell you what she's up to. And wait till I tell you what's happening over at MSNBC, how the faux progressive station has totally shit the bed. Stay right there, guys. We'll be right back. Back, guys. We're back. reporter caught up with Republican Senator Mike Rounds from South Dakota, and he asked him about Trump's recent KKK gaffe. Now, for those of you who don't know, Trump was asked three times on CNN to disavow David Duke and white supremacists, and he didn't. Now, after the fact, he blamed it on a faulty earpiece and said that he does disavow them, but Senator Rounds had an interesting take on the situation. He said, quote, "My choice would still be, honestly, I'm still leaning to Marco Rubio, as I suspect there are others who are. But nonetheless, our critical issue is fixing things in the United States, and you can't do that if you've got Bernie or Hillary." That's adorable. "Even if you're disappointed with the way he's responding to things, even if you're mad at him, you disagree with him. If he did it intentionally, I don't think he did. I think he just made a mistake. But even if he did, they're still going to do a better job with him there than if you had Hillary or Bernie in his place." Okay, he's saying, even if Trump didn't disavow the KKK, and it was on purpose because he sympathizes and he wants the votes of overt racists, even if he's kind of aligning himself with the KKK, that's better than voting for a Democrat. No, no, no. This is a super telling story. Because flip the script. Let's say it was a Democratic congressman or senator who's asked a question about, you know, another Democrat who's viewed as an extremist Democrat. And, you know, this Democrat had ties to a violent guerrilla communist group known to attack civilians. So it's a terrorist organization. And they're asked three times on CNN, "Hey, do you disavow the leader of this guerrilla communist terrorist organization that has killed people?" And they go, I don't know anything about him. I don't know anything about it. And let's move along here. If a Democratic congressman was like, even if they are sympathetic to the guerrilla communist terrorists, they're better than the opposite, how would the media respond? No, it'd be over. There'd be wall-to-wall headlines, breaking news, 24/7 for a week long. People be like, this isn't what are you saying? This isn't a respectable opinion. This isn't debatable. You're saying even if he doesn't disavow and he's on the side of terrorists, whatever. It's whatever. It's still better than the opposite. We have a party in the U.S. that has totally lost his fucking mind. They're saying it now. They're just saying it. Yeah, even if he's kind of with the KKK, it's better than the Democrats. What? What? In the 1990s, this was unacceptable. A Republican in the 1990s would have been run out of Washington if this was their take. Are you kidding me? Yeah, you know, hey, so what? You're with the Klan. It is what it is. You're still better than the opposite. That is lunacy. That is sheer lunacy. This is the conversation that we're now having in America. This is the level of conversation we're now having. Hey, he's with the terrorists, but is he still better than the Democrats? Yeah. Yeah, he is. Okay, if you say so. And this guy, by the way, if he's against Hillary in the general election, it's not an open question, man. He's the favorite. USA Today had him up by 3 points in a recent poll. And I actually think that it'd be an even harder battle for Hillary than that indicates. So, you have this to look forward to, guys. This dystopian future, which is right in front of our eyes. All right, now, let's go to Chuck Todd and their silliness. Let's go to human granola or human oatmeal, Chuck Todd. In the middle of a conversation on MSNBC about how unelectable Trump is, Chuck Todd gave us this bombshell.
Speculation today from very informed people that at least one Republican Senate incumbent, if given the choice, might publicly endorse Hillary Clinton.
Incumbent senator.
Well, there's at least one that I've heard that could end up doing that, making that choice. Mm-hmm. Not because they want to, but because they need to send that message. Look, there's a bunch of them running for re-election in blue states.
Yeah.
Okay?
Guys, that doesn't hurt Trump. They have this big, long conversation about how unelectable he is, and then he throws that out there. Like, oh, this is the point they're at. If you really follow politics closely, then you know that doesn't mean anything. If anything, that helps Trump. Because he's portrayed himself as this anti-establishment crusader. So when a Republican establishment politician says, hey, I'm not with him, he's going to go, see, I'm exactly right. What a sellout this guy is. And by the way, he's kind of right if he says that. So they don't understand the playbook anymore. If you look at the approval rating for Congress, for the past year, year and a half, it's been going back and forth between 9% and about 16%. It wasn't that long ago, the approval rating of Congress was 9%. And these guys are like, hey, a Republican senator might endorse Hillary over Trump. Man, he's so unelectable, that's going to hurt him. It's not going to hurt him in any way, shape, or form. They fundamentally don't understand politics. Chuck Todd does politics for a living, and he's flailing in the wind. Like, it doesn't even occur to you, hey, wait, let me check the approval rating of Congress before I say something like this. Hey, let me think of the implications and how Trump can spin it. And again, what he'll say is, this is the establishment against me, like I told you guys from day one. I don't want their endorsement. If I had their endorsement, I'd be worse off. I don't need their endorsement. Do you not understand any of this? And this is going to get his base more riled up and more excited to vote for him. Because it's more evidence into what he's been saying, that I'm the anti-establishment guy. Even though, by the way, is he actually going to be anti-establishment? Probably not. He's a fucking billionaire who has his ties made in China, as he says, I'm going to get tough on China. And then the other angle to this is, if a Republican senator endorses Hillary Clinton, that doesn't help Hillary Clinton. That hurts Hillary Clinton. The base is already demoralized. Call it what it is, man. Bernie Sanders has the heart of the Democratic base, of true progressives, true liberals. It's Bernie Sanders. So if Bernie Sanders doesn't get the nomination, Hillary does get the nomination, the base is already fucking wounded on the ground, like, I don't want to vote for Hillary, Iraq war vote, Patriot Act, fucking Wall Street connections, NAFTA, criminalizing blacks, all this stuff. They don't want to do it. And then you add the sprinkles and the cherry on top where a Republican senator comes out like, I want Hillary over Trump. What a disaster! And by the way, it's not just elected Republicans. You know who else wants Hillary over Trump? Neocons. Why do they want Hillary over Trump? Trump is a question mark. Trump's liable to randomly say, you know what? We have 900 military bases. Why do we have them? Shut them down. Hey, I don't want to be in Syria. He said this a few times in the debates. Yeah, let Putin fight ISIS. I don't care. I'm going to get out of there. I want them to do Syria. So he's a question mark. He might do that. Now, he might be super aggressive and add build 1,000 more military bases and do more wars. Of course, you don't know what he's going to do. He's Trump. But with Hillary, oh, they know what she's going to do. Oh, military-industrial complex all day long. She's saying, hey, let's get more involved in Syria. I'm against Assad and I'm against ISIS. Ooh, fight the rebels and the government. More war, endless war. Yay! Hey, she's super anti-Iran. She was against the deal before she was for the deal. Now she's pretending like she's for it. She's more militaristic. She's more hawkish. She's been all along. That's what her voting record indicates. The neocons are like, why the fuck not? That plus she'll sell out to Wall Street, as she already has, and she'll do the bidding of the corporations. They're like, can I look the other way on social issues when it comes to gay rights and abortion and the stuff where Hillary Clinton is now good on? I guess, if it means endless war and selling out to corporations, right on. So she's got neocons on her side. She's got some Republican senators who are going to endorse her. And these idiots are like, is this going to hurt Trump? No, it's going to help him, and it's going to hurt Hillary. The perpetual underestimating of Trump is now one of the main things I fear. I see it from smart people, very smart journalists who I respect. They're already like, yeah, it'd be over if Trump's a nominee. Am I right? No. No, you're wrong. I told you a million times, a recent USA Today poll, Trump beats Hillary by 3%. It's a long way to go. A million things can happen. But already he has a 3 percentage point lead. I smell disaster from a mile away here. Okay. Now, Similar theme here. So Paul Ryan and Mitch McConnell came out and did a press conference yesterday during Super Tuesday to call out Donald Trump. In fact, that's the literal wording that they used on the banner on CNN. Republican leaders call out Donald Trump. So among other things, Ryan said this: if a person wants to be the nominee of the Republican Party, there can be no evasion and no games. They must reject any group or cause that is built on bigotry. That's adorable. We don't prey on people's prejudices. That's only exactly what you guys do. We appeal to their highest ideals. This is the party of a Lincoln. We believe all people are created equal in the eyes of God and our government, and if someone wants to be our nominee, they must understand this. So they're responding, of course, to what's happening with the KKK, what happened recently with the KKK, where Trump was asked three times to disavow David Duke and white supremacists. He didn't do it live on CNN. He blamed it on an earpiece later, and later on he disavowed them, but everybody was outraged that he didn't disavow them on the spot, and even Republicans here are like, hey, that's not right. Now, what's hilarious, of course, is the, we must reject any group built on bigotry. How are you going to reject your entire movement? No, understand, guys, that this isn't a question. It's on the record that they run on the Southern strategy, which means appeal to racist Southern whites, particularly racist Southern old whites. And then, yeah, whatever, give the minorities to those Democrats. Who cares about minorities? We're going to run with the racists on our side here. We don't prey on people's prejudices. That's exactly what you do in almost every realm. So it's hilarious, and there's hypocrisy. But furthermore, like, I don't doubt that they really think that, hey, this will hurt Trump, and this will help Rubio, the guy who they're really for, the establishment candidate, because Rubio's predictable and he'll do what the corporations want, just like they do. They probably think, like, we got him. No, you don't got him. Yet again, this is going to feed right into Trump's narrative of, I'm anti-establishment. See, here's the establishment calling me out. I told you I'm not with them. That's why they feel the need to call me out. Guys, Congress oscillates between a 9% and a 16% approval rating. You want those guys against you. You don't want those guys for you. So they come out against him. He's going to be like, good. And he even said it. Trump said it in the press conference yesterday when he's doing his victory lap. He's like, you know, Paul Ryan, I don't have anything against the guy. If he has something against me, fine. I mean, it's going to hurt him very much if he has problems against me, but, you know, I got nothing against the guy. He's already doing the authoritarian strongman move on these guys. He's already saying, oh, you want to be against me? By all means. It's only going to help me, and furthermore, I will bury you if you continue to be against me when I get more power. What we need is somebody who knows how to play these political games on the Democratic side, somebody who uses that kind of debating style and negotiation tactics to get us universal health care. That's what we need in the country, not somebody who's a bigot, who's a xenophobe, who's massively intolerant, who gets in there and he's like, I will now use my power to do all the wrong things and to be authoritarian and to avoid checks and balances. But that's what we have with Trump. And it's so funny to me that these guys think, no, this time we'll derail him. Let's all do a press conference and call him out. You're some of the most deeply unlikable people in the country. Your approval rating is between 9 and 16%. You calling him out doesn't hurt him. It helps him. Now step aside. More. I must sign out of this shit. I hate random computer noises, which I get all the fucking time. All right, Debbie Wasserman Schultz, let me tell you what she's up to, and shocker, it ain't very good. Predatory payday lenders have a new powerful ally on their side, DNC head Debbie Wasserman Schultz. So this is an incredible story. Huffington Post reports here. Payday lenders have been gunning for the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau since the day President Obama tapped Elizabeth Warren to set up the agency. They've had plenty of help from congressional Republicans, longtime recipients of campaign contributions from the payday loan industry, as the CFPB has moved closer to adopting new rules to shield families from predatory lending, the GOP has assailed the agency from every conceivable angle, going after its budget, attempting to tie its hands with new layers of red tape, fomenting conspiracy theories about rogue regulators illegally shutting down businesses, and launching direct attacks on payday loan rules themselves. They continue here. To date, the GOP blitz has resulted in a few close shaves for the young agency, but no actual defeats. But the industry has cultivated a powerful new ally in recent weeks, Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Wasserman Schultz is co-sponsoring a new bill that would gut the CFPB's forthcoming payday loan regulations. She's also attempting to gin up Democratic support for the legislation on Capitol Hill. Now, this is my favorite part of the story. The bill is misleadingly called the Consumer Protection and Choice Act. Oh, I know, I know. Just like the Patriot Act. If you don't vote for it, you're not a patriot. I mean, sure, it rips up the Constitution and throws it in the garbage and totally ignores the Fourth Amendment, but, minor details. Are you a patriot or are you not a patriot? You got to vote for this. That's exactly what's happening here. Oh, the Consumer Protection Choice Act. Are you against consumer protection? Are you against choice? And actually, choice is kind of admitting a little bit what's going on here. We want to give you the choice to get ripped off by predatory lenders. That's the kind of choice they're talking about. By the way, what does this do? It protects the lenders whose average interest rate is 390%. Oh, my goodness. Debbie Wasserman Schultz. Oh, I'm a Democratic lion. I care so much about the little guy. I'm for the people. I'm a Democrat. I'm a good guy. I'm a Democrat. Oh, yeah, you care so much about the little people that you just sided with the predatory lenders who charge them 390% interest. My ass cheeks, you care about the little guy. You're a fucking sellout. And this is exactly the problem, man. You got the establishment Democrats who are almost as bad as the Republicans. They happen to be better on social issues, okay? So fair is fair. They're better on all those things. But on many fronts, especially when it comes to Wall Street, especially when it comes to financial regulation, especially when it comes to the economy, they're even bigger liars than the Republicans, because at least the Republicans tell you, I'm going to fuck you. I'm going to get into office, and I'm going to cut taxes for the rich, and I'm going to deregulate, and yes, that's what caused the crash last time, and I'm going to do it again today. Debbie Wasserman Schultz and establishment Democratic hacks are like, oh, no, I'm for the little guy. That's why our party's so great. We're looking out for the little ones. Anyway, let's try to run roughshod over the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, which has been doing fantastic work. Guys, I have personal experience with the CFPB. So I had a credit card that I lost or something, and when I had to call up to get a new credit card and cancel the old credit card, they said to me, hey, you know, there's an easy way to avoid problems like this. I'm going to sell you protection. So more protection for your card. Are you, you know, you want to do that? I was like, yeah. Now, I had just come off a long night of drinking. I had lost my card in the city. I was super hungover. I wasn't thinking straight. I didn't ask further questions. I said, okay, yeah, extra protection sounds lovely. So they started charging me whatever it was a month, $5, $10 a month for X amount of time. And come to find out, there was the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, the birth child of Elizabeth Warren, who's actually a progressive. They realized that, hey, all these credit card companies are now selling protection for the credit cards. They said, show us your mechanism of protection. What do you mean you're selling more protection? What does that mean? And then the credit card companies were like, yeah, about that, we're not doing anything. We're just saying that we're selling protection, collecting the money, ripping people off, and not giving them anything. Nothing extra. They don't get anything extra. So what happened? Because of the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, you know, I end up getting a check in the mail for I forget how many hundreds of dollars it was. They're like, yeah, yeah, this was your credit card company ripping you off. Here you go. Here's your money back. And Debbie Wasserman Schultz is like, yeah, I don't know. I don't know about this CFPB looking out for the people and the little guy. Fuck that. Fuck that. Let's go on the side of the payday lenders who charge people at their worst moment 390% interest. That's predatory lending. That's predatory lending. They're saying, no, we're going to be on the side of the lenders here. Let's sneakily try to get rid of the regulations on payday lenders. as we pretend like we're for the little guy, because, again, we have the Orwellian name, the Consumer Protection and Choice Act. Debbie Wasserman Schultz is one of the bad guys. Don't let anybody tell you differently. So Mitch McConnell and the Republicans have been saying since Scalia's death that they're not even going to have hearings on filling his seat. Never mind doing a vote.
I mean, don't be crazy.
They're not even going to have hearings as to potential nominees. So McConnell visited the president recently to see if they can make any progress. I guess Obama invited McConnell. I don't think McConnell, you know, invited himself or talked to Obama and just decided to go. I think Obama was like, come on, let's talk this out. So Mitch McConnell, doing his duty here at least, he says, okay, we got to try to figure something out. Let's go do this. So Huffington Post reports that after the meeting, quote, McConnell announced Tuesday that he's standing by his decision, even going to the White House with Judiciary Committee Chairman Chuck Grassley to tell President Barack Obama. McConnell goes on to say, we will reiterate that the American people will have a voice in the vacancy on the Supreme Court as they choose the next president, who in turn will nominate the next Supreme Court justice. Okay, so what happened is McConnell goes to meet with Obama. Him and Grassley walk in. And Obama's like, all right, now, Mitch, let's have a conversation here about what direction we go for the judges. McConnell's like, okay, no. We're coming here to tell you it's not happening. He's like, well, what if I nominate a Republican? No. We're, nope, not considering anything, anybody. This meeting is useless. I am coming here now to tell you, forget it. Drop it. You're done. It's over. The next president will nominate the next justice. And then they leave. That's unbelievable. Now, people are wrongly saying, well, you know, the Democrats have done this when it was the last year for the Democrats. No. People missing. They're missing that the longest time a nominee was blocked previously was about 160 days. That's the longest time a nominee was blocked. What the Republicans are talking about today is well over 300 days of blocking. Not even having committee hearings, not anything. Never mind a vote, nothing. And they're saying up front, we will be super obstructionist, and this is what we're going to do. Okay, for everybody who has said every step of the way, you know, hey, the problem is Obama. The problem is he doesn't negotiate, he doesn't compromise, he's divisive, he's this, he's that. Look at these Republicans. For fuck's sake, man, they broke the filibuster record under Obama. That's it. Game, set, match on the conversation. It's over. They're the obstructionists. They tried to repeal Obamacare over 55 times. They're the problem. Even after Obama buckled and negotiated and compromised twice on health care, not single payer, not public option, we'll do your original plan, Richard Nixon's original plan, the right-wing think tank, the Heritage Foundation's original plan. Mitt Romney's plan, the individual mandate health care system. How many Republican votes did he get for their plan? Donut. Zero. And now they go visit him and they say, just to let you know, it's over. We're not doing anything. Okay? Just to let you know. This is historic obstruction. And the media, where the fuck are you? No, to the media here, this is like, you know, this is basic stuff. Are you going to give the facts or are you not going to give the facts? Are you going to be objective about this or are you not going to be objective? If you're being objective, you talk about this and you fucking shame the people who decided our system of government, not interested. Not interested. It's incredible the point we're at here. We got a fucking pseudo-fascist who's leading on the Republican side, almost certainly going to lock it up. We have the party themselves just saying we're not even interested in this system of government anymore. We're not going to abide by it. We're not going to go with the rules here. And the media... They got nothing to say. Pathetic across the board. All right, let me do one more here. Melissa Harris Perry was an MSNBC personality. She hosted a show on the weekends and did some election coverage and stuff like that. And she recently had a falling out with MSNBC. They were putting her on the back burner, and it looked like they were going to can her show. And she responded by walking out before they could can it. And then obviously after she walked out, they canned it. And now she's not being very quiet about it. So first off, let me just say, I'm really not a fan of hers, okay? I mean, she did this ridiculous anti-Snowden rant at the time, and she sided with Obama simply because she's a Democratic loyalist, and she's a pro-Democratic Party hack, in my opinion. And I also don't like that she portrays herself as being more progressive as she's a Democratic Party loyalist. And she oftentimes, she's slightly authoritarian in her views. She always plays the identity politics angle, and she doesn't make the best arguments when doing identity politics either. So for a million and one reasons, I'm not a fan of hers. But that being said, why was MSNBC putting her on the back burner? Well, that's an interesting question. They did it because they want to stop all left-leaning programming. In fact, we know from memos from not that long ago, they decided we're going to go in a new direction. We're going to be CNN Lite. Now, a lot of you might not know the history of MSNBC. They started out trying to be Fox News Lite. They really did. There was a time where they hired Michael Savage, the craziest right-wing radio host in the country. So they tried that. They failed miserably. Then they tried, we're going to be the liberal network. Now, the problem with their model is they weren't the liberal network. They were the Democratic Party network, which is much less popular and has much less appeal than actually being true liberals. So now they decided, well, that didn't work either. Let's be CNN Lite. Now, they're not going to win in any way, shape, or form that way because CNN already sucks in the ratings. Your plan is to copy a network that already sucks in the ratings? That sounds like a terrible idea. So she took to Twitter to voice some concerns here, and she said, a few apologies. Martin Bashir and Torre, and that's Karen Finney there, I'm sorry for and ashamed of my earlier silence. I gave into culture of fear at MSNBC. So for those of you who don't know, they were fired for various reasons, and she went on air. She never said anything about it. She never defended her colleague. She just went along and played the insider game because she was an insider at the time. Now she's saying, hey, I apologize for that. And then the next thing is, one of the unintended consequences of salary inequity, harder to get us to take one of those non-disclosure payoffs, huh? Hashtag freedom over money. So what she's saying there is, apparently she knows she was paid less than male counterparts, and she's like, I'm not going to sign a non-disclosure form where I don't talk about what happened at MSNBC. I'm going to talk about it now. So a lot of this you can argue, hey, it's just a bitter breakup between network and host. That's probably true. But is some of the stuff true that she's saying here, broadly speaking? So when she says there was a culture of fear at MSNBC, I take away from that exactly what we've been saying for years, which is MSNBC is the Democratic establishment network. That's not the same as being liberal. It's not the same as being progressive. It's rah-rah Democrats. So there's a culture of fear where when management excommunicates somebody, your host did bad, go away. You gotta play ball. You gotta go along with that. When they tell you, hey, go softer on the Democrats than you do on the Republicans, go hard on the Republicans. If Obama does something that's not progressive, that's what that tells me. Culture of fear. And we also happen to know because Cenk from TYT was an MSNBC host. That's exactly what happens behind the scenes. They say, be kind to the Democrats, be hard on the Republicans. We play party politics here. You are the establishment, and this is how we're going to act moving forward. And now it's interesting to see that when another person, another host, leaves there, she comes out and says, yeah, that's kind of all true. Okay, I'm out of time, guys. I love you, and I will see all of you tomorrow here, same time, same place. Peace.